And you're on Southern FM, 88.3 on your dial.
My name's Tim Byrne, and I'm an education officer at ScienceWorks, and I have been the team leader for the exhibition Off the Planet.
Good evening, Tim. Welcome to the space show.
Thanks very much, Andrew. It's a pleasure to have you here, mobile.
Yes. And what exhibition is it?
The exhibition's called Off the Planet. It's originated from the Investigator, the Science and Discovery Centre in Adelaide. But here at ScienceWorks, we've actually added a number of things from our space technology collections to complement the interactive side of the exhibition. And some of these collection objects actually haven't been on display before.
Well, perhaps we could take a walk around and have a look at some of the things. And over here we see a large lump of, looks like iron, or is it rock?
It's an iron nickel meteorite. I think it has a few other elements there in trace proportions. It's one of the Cranbin meteorites. There was about 12 fragments, about four of which were quite big. This one is just under a ton. It's 900 kilos in weight. And it was first actually discovered by Europeans in about 1860. The original Cranbin number one, which was the largest of the Cranbin pieces that fell to Earth, was apparently known to the Aborigines of the area. And there's anecdotal evidence to suggest that they actually had corroborees and dances and what have you around this large projecting piece of iron meteorite. This little piece that we have here seemed to be one of the last pieces to break off the mother rock, and it ended up actually just down near Langwarrin, Beaconsfield Way. Even though it's called the Cranbin meteorite, it nearly fell into the drink. It was heading in a southwesterly direction and pulled up actually not far from the town of Piersdale. And I had a look on a Melway reference map the other day, and it probably would have landed in one of the streets of Piersdale, which would have given people living there now quite a shock if it had fallen in recent times.
I see from the caption here it's supposed to have a mass of about 900 kilograms. That's enough to make a small car.
900 kilograms. If you melted it down, it'd probably be worth a few thousand dollars. But as a display specimen, it's worth a lot more. Originally, the Cranbin number one, this is actually number 10, Cranbin number one sold for £300 in the 1860s. We worked out the other day that it'd be the equivalent of selling something for maybe a few hundred thousand dollars. So I don't know what a large meteorite like this would be worth as a collector's item, but presumably, you know, whatever anyone's worth, you know, what anyone's worth paying for. It's not the most valuable meteorite we have here. We actually have one that's only about 126 grams. It's one of the original Murchison meteorite fragments, and it's worth about $250 a gram. So that's worth about $40,000 if we're able to sell it on the open market.
I noticed, Tim, this meteorite looks rather shiny. In fact, it almost looks like it's been varnished. Is that the case?
Yes, there's a little patch right at the very apex of the meteorite that looks like it's been acid etched to have a look at the crystalline structure. I don't know enough about the mineralogy of meteorites to tell you exactly what a geologist or a specialist would be looking for, but there is a characteristic fingerprint type crystalline structure to meteorites such as this, and it's been coated with what looks like some varnish or maybe even a resin to exclude the oxygen. You can see in other places on the meteorite where it hasn't been protected that it is quite rusty, and being 98% iron or thereabouts, the iron is of course starting to turn into iron oxide, and little bits and pieces are falling off it like dandruff every day. I think that's almost unavoidable. People can touch it, and as we say on the little sign here, that it's probably the oldest thing you'll ever touch after grandma, I guess. But anyway, it's 4.5 billion years old. Presumably it formed even before the Earth itself, or about the same time.
Well, Tim, we've taken a walk over to another area, and you've got a lot more meteorites here, and they're all quite different.
Well, we asked Dermot Henry from mineralogy in at the 328 Swanson Street site, the City Museum, to pick out half a dozen or so specimens that look interesting and maybe tell interesting stories. And you can see some more of that acid etching there on one of the Hembury iron meteorites. That's probably one of Australia's largest crater structures. Once again, if you know something about the mineralogy of meteorites, it'll probably mean more to you, but it's a little bit plainer and clearer. One of the other interesting ones is shows that characteristic pockmarking that meteorites sometimes show. Tektites also show this, the remelting and solidifying of the meteorites that came through the atmosphere, all that dimpling like a golf ball where pieces have sort of ablated and fallen off.
Have you ever been to Henbury?
Never been to Henbury. I've been past it. I got within 2 or 3 kilometres on a bus, but unfortunately the bus driver, I had to more or less be content with his description of it.
All right, I've been lucky enough to persuade two coached captains to take the coach in and the tour party in, and we spent usually have our lunch there. It's quite amazing. But you can't find any meteorites left there, but you see lots of shocked rock.
Right. I've seen some of that shocked rock for sale, and I understand Hembury is very old, but the craters still look very much like a what you'd imagine a meteorite crater would look like, even though they're presumably millions of years old, aren't they?
I can't remember the exact age. I thought they're only a couple of thousand years old. But the meteorite obviously broke up in mid-air because there's a cluster of craters.
Yes, this is another thing about meteorites. They don't always land in one lump. I suppose this short journey they make through the atmosphere, travelling at 25 times the speed of sound, or 7 kilometres a second, or whatever the typical entry speed is, it causes all sorts of bangs and whizzes. The sounds that people, eyewitnesses have actually described that meteorites make are quite remarkable. In fact, that sound in the background probably would not be too far off the mark for some of them. And then, of course, there's that sonic boom when they finally coming in at hypersonic speeds, there's a low thunder that seems to sort of conclude the passage of the meteorite. The meteorite, of course, has often landed well before any sounds are heard, because, you might see a meteorite and it's 100 kilometres away in the sky, but the sound's going to take a lot longer to actually reach you, if in fact it does.
Yeah, some of the other meteorites here look quite different. The Henbury ones there are obviously made of iron. Another one here looks like a piece of slate. What's that?
I am not a meteorite expert, but I think Dermot has chosen a stony meteorite. I think all the meteorites are basically, if one goes back to the theory that they're fragments of asteroids, and asteroids themselves are sort of miniature planets or planetoids, then you have an iron nickel core, such as we have in our planet. This is what's surmised. And then as you slowly move away from the core, you get less dense material forming, and the stony meteorite probably corresponds to our mantle and the material that's on that. And then finally, you might actually get material that might correspond to the surface of a planet, like the Murchison stony meteorite here actually contains, at least there's been 14 different amino acids identified in them, and that's what makes them truly remarkable and rare and special. This one here fell to earth at Murchison, just outside of Shepparton, in 1969. Scientists were very excited about it. In fact, I think it would probably be fair to say that they're as excited about this Murchison meteorite as they were about finding that Martian meteorite down in Antarctica. Maybe the Martian meteorite, if it substantiates its claim of having microfossils, will be truly the greatest find of found within a meteorite. But 14 different amino acids in a meteorite suggests that the building blocks, or the structures of building blocks being found elsewhere in the solar system, suggests that maybe life is more prevalent than we perhaps first imagined.
And we've got a fragment of that Murchison meteorite here in the display case. Why is it black?
I think it has a lot of carbon in it. In fact, it's referred to as a carbonaceous chondrite. I've tried to find out exactly, when you're looking at it closely, which parts are the carbon parts and which parts are the chondrules, but there is little specks throughout it. And under a microscope, you can see the structure a bit more clearly. It's part of the stony group of meteorites, and so you're going to have, obviously, various lighter elements like silica, I think, present. But I think in answer to your question, the black is basically because of the presence of carbon.
And one of the last ones here, it looks like steel, but with rock in it. What's that?
Well, there you have a transitional meteorite, one that actually doesn't fit easily into either the stony category or the iron category. And I think Dermot's chosen that one to represent that boundary line between the mantle and the core. And presumably meteorites, can represent any part of, these planetoid structures, and that one there is nicely polished up, so you can see the metal gleaming, like the chrome on your bumper bar of your car, say, and the stony bits look quite glassy, and one can imagine that as almost a piece of jewellery. And yet there it is. It's a it's a very ancient rock that fell out of the sky down near Argentina some time ago.
Now, we've mentioned already the Henbury craters. There's some other large craters here in Australia, aren't there? And I noticed a photograph of one here. What's this one?
Well, we have a little picture of the Wolf Creek crater. I haven't been there, but it sounds like, from the literature at least, it's the second biggest existing crater that's been identified as definitely meteoric origin. And Wolf Creek crater is about a kilometre across in round figures. It's circular. Obviously, the meteorite, or the maybe even the comet or whatever it was that hit it, exploded and evaporated on impact. And it's about 300,000 years old, they've estimated. So there's been a fair bit of erosion and I suppose a softening of the contours of the crater. It's about 50 metres deep, and it's near Halls Creek up in the Kimberleys. If anyone's doing a trip to Broome, I suppose it would only be a few hundred kilometres away from there. And you can also see from the photograph there the change in the floor of the crater itself near the centre, which corresponds with a bit of uplift. Generally speaking, when an object hits something fluid, there is actually a centre uplift, and I don't know what the technical term for that is, but you can see here that some different material was brought up from underneath the Earth's crust. Presumably it was turned to liquid, and it was able to actually rise up, and henceforth has been a different type of mineral and a different type of vegetative growth in that area there, which makes it look like a bullseye. Or even an eyeball, I suppose, depending on your imaginative bent. It would really be a remarkable site to visit. And Wolf Creek's in Australia. Of course, the only other one that's a bit bigger is the Arizona, I think it's called the Beringer crater in Arizona, and that's probably about 200 metres wider in diameter, a little bit bigger.
Well, thanks, Tim, for joining us on the Space Show tonight.
My pleasure, Andrew. It was... yeah, very interesting to talk to you.
And there's plenty more to see here at this exhibition.